Hello, everybody.
Hi, Dave. Oh, there's a message from Mr. Murphy. He's missing his invite. I'll get that to him real quick. Great. And it looks like BCAT is on, so I'll give it just a second.
Joe, it looks like you're at Paradise Lodge.
Up by Castle Rock, looking across towards Rainier. That was about 7 years ago.
You're just trying to one up the view that we had from Richard's place last meeting.
Yeah, but his was live. I mean,
I just look out my windows and I see trees.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give it about half a minute, we'll be ready to go. Amanda, everything's clear with BCAT?
Everything looks good.
Okay. Great.
And I'll continue to go ahead and troubleshoot in the background to get Mr. Murphy logged in.
Okay, sounds great. It's 5:31 p.m. I call the meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission to order. Regular meeting of Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. Our first agenda item is introductions. We'll begin in the south end with, let's start with Commissioner Allen. We welcome her return. She can hear us. Is she appearing by video or audio? Do you know?
It looks like just audio right now.
Okay. Hopefully we'll be able to communicate with her, so then we'll go to Commissioner Galloway.
Commissioner Galloway, South Kitsap.
And Jim Svensson, can you hear us, Commissioner? Still on mute, hopefully he can hear us. Yeah, let's work our way to Central Kitsap.
I'm from Central Kitsap.
That's my fault, I should have called on one of you first. Let's start with Richard.
All right. Good evening. I'm Richard Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
Okay. Commissioner Beam.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Okay. Mike Elias in Central Kitsap. And in North Kitsap, Commissioner Mull.
Amy Mull, North Kitsap.
Commissioner Phillips.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
Okay. And I do not see our commissioner there. Hopefully he'll be joining us soon. I'm sorry, Amanda, you said you got an email from him?
Yeah, actually, I just switched over. There's Mr. Murphy right there. Might take just a second for everything to connect.
With the login, perfect. There's Jim's audio.
Yeah, Svensson checking in.
Great.
South Kitsap.
Perfect.
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Great. Okay, welcome. We have a quorum. Move to agenda item B, virtual meeting protocol, which we're all familiar with now. By the time we get used to it, though, it'll be time to go back to regular in-person meetings, which is fine by me. I miss all of you. Video is the next best thing, but I'd rather see everybody in person. So, and then if we have any members of the public that want to participate, we strive to make sure these meetings are just as you're able to participate virtually as you are in person. So when we get to general public comment, we'll give instructions on how to participate. Next agenda item is item C, adoption of agenda. Are there any amendments or changes or corrections to it? Okay, hearing none, is there a motion to approve the agenda as presented?
Move to approve the agenda as proposed.
Okay, we have a motion, is there a second?
I'll second. Svensson.
Great. Glad somebody took the mic off. Or on, put it on. We have a motion and second to approve the agenda as presented. All those in favor signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. And I note that Kim Allen's placard has come up. Kim, can you hear us? Okay, I'm not sure, but it appears that she has joined our meeting, which is great. And I also see Director Jeff Remack. Appreciate you being here today. Okay, item D, adoption of minutes of May 21st, 2020. As I understand, those minutes have not been prepared yet because of other scheduling conflicts. So we hope to have those ready for the next meeting in 2 weeks. Is that correct, Amanda?
That is correct. Thank you.
Okay, great. Item E, general public comment. This is the opportunity for members of the public to present testimony about any item to the Planning Commission. Have we had any written testimony about any items so far, Amanda?
I have not received any.
Okay, for this particular meeting, great. And I'm noting that our participants doesn't appear on your screen. If anybody wants to participate, you can hit chat and send messages to us, and you can also raise your hand. And then by phone, I believe it's *9, correct?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. So far we don't have anybody. So we'll go ahead and continue with our meeting to agenda item F, announcements.
Mr. Chair, I have an announcement if any other planning commissioners may not have anything.
Great. Well, go ahead, Angie.
Okay. So I think last planning commission, we had our work study on the first draft changes to the stormwater design manual. This tentative schedule shared with the planning commission that evening had another follow-up work study for this particular planning commission work study as well. Unfortunately, we are still working on second draft changes as well as incorporating legal feedback on Title 12 housekeeping edits. So as a result, we wanted to have a meaningful conversation with the Planning Commission, but we didn't have enough materials ready for tonight. So kind of schedule slip a little bit. We're looking at June 16th instead of a public hearing. We're tentatively planning to come back as a work study on the second draft changes, as well as some additional information on water as a resource, for example. We met with the project team, which again includes internally DCD as well as the Stormwater Utility and Public Works today, to outline our presentation material. So that should be moving forward. Additional schedule modifications include, instead of the 16th of June being our targeted public hearing, we're looking at July 7th. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Amanda, we've incorporated the updated tentative schedule in the overall Planning Commission topics. In that schedule that we share with them?
Yes, in the tentative topic schedule that was updated and sent the second time.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Ms. Amanda.
You're welcome.
I'm happy to answer any questions on kind of the schedule change from the Planning Commission, if there is any.
I'd like to, at the previous meeting, you mentioned the Kitsap Building Association submitted a letter and that we would be receiving that after staff had the opportunity to review it and then incorporate any changes. Could you tell us the status of it?
Absolutely. It is drafted. Mr. Tucker and myself had some minor edits, so hopefully by tomorrow or a worst case scenario at the end of the week, those responses to their comments as well as questions will be available to the Planning Commission, KBA, as well as the Board of County Commissioners. So we're getting close.
Great, thank you. Commissioners, any other comments? Any other reports from commissioners or staff? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to our next agenda item. Item G, work study 2019-2020 zoning use table update, Darren Gurney. And I will mention too, because I don't think we got an email out, the staff's planning to record the presentation. And so it's imperative that all of us turn our microphones to mute. I noticed earlier we had a canine wanting to participate in the meeting, which is great, I love dogs. But I noticed for this particular portion of the meeting, we want to listen to Darren's presentation, and then afterwards we'll be able to ask any questions or have exchange of information with staff, if that works with everybody. Okay. Great, Darren. I saw his video and now the video is gone. I'm guessing he must be retrieving a document or the presentation.
Sorry, I'm closing my computer because the audio does not work well with the camera setting. So
okay, no problem.
And I'm going to try and share my screen here. But it seems not to be working.
Go ahead and give it a try again, Darren. I just changed one of the settings. It should pop up right now. So give it one more shot.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes, it did. Okay, so let's see here. Is everybody able to see the PowerPoint on the screen?
Yes.
Okay. So thank you, Mike, for kind of the prelude to the meeting here. Again, this is the zoning use table update. As Commissioner Eliason mentioned, this is a recorded session that we are planning to use as a vehicle to present to the public each of these complex documents that are going to be brought before you in the next couple of meetings. So at this time, we're going to ask that questions be written down and saved until the end of the presentation. And that way we can get through all the materials. You may have some of your questions answered as we move through the slides. With that said, I'm going to go ahead and start. And for the record, my name is Darren Gurney, Kitsap County Department of Community Development and project lead for the zoning use table update. So the use table, this was a project that was initiated quite a while ago. What we are updating includes the zoning use tables, which is in chapter 410. This is intended to modernize and streamline and correct discrepancies in urban growth areas, limited area of more intense rural development, and rural commercial, rural industrial, and mineral resource overlay zones. That being said, I will say with one caveat, we do have new uses proposed that requires that we address those uses in the rural zones when those came through, and that'll come up later in the presentation. This project revises the level of permit review for specific uses, reorganizes the footnotes with the use table, and reduces the surprises during the permit review process by doing so. We also clarify development standards for some of the uses in that process as well. This project ensures consistency and a predictability across the sections of the code. We have a lot of things in multiple locations. As those who use the code often will say, it's a maze of things that you have to put together, or a puzzle, better term, to get all the things into an application that you need. The project does not include updates to site design, the development standards, such as setbacks or densities. That being said, there are some new uses that also include design standards because we needed to create some of those with a new use. So the general goal and policy guidance from the comprehensive plan, of course, that generates from the Growth Management Act. That includes outreach that's early and often. These are all things that you've heard, I believe, in previous presentations. But outreach early and often, we have an example later of all the outreach that we've done to date, including coordination with jurisdictions and tribal agencies. Major goals that we have in our comprehensive plan is to remove the barriers to investment in urban growth areas. And this also includes a prioritization of the primary uses of the zone, which really reflects the zone intent statements in each zone chapter. We're also supporting a mix of uses at different scales. And with that, we're also reorganizing the development regulations to better implement the goals and policies. There's a couple of nuances that we have to address in the footnotes and the use table and how they interact with each other. The project process, we have presented to this planning commission before on this, so this is going to be a fairly quick repeat of that set of slides. Scoping, we have conducted countywide surveys, internal reviews, workshops with the planning commission, open houses, received public comment, held some detailed stakeholder workshops, all in development of the draft proposal. As mentioned before, there are other projects that are not included with this. Kingston Urban Village Center, UVC zone specifically. You'll see that we're addressing the Lammards. That does not include the Port Gamble Master Plan in terms of changing any intent or content of the zones. That is a separate project that I believe has made its way through the system, but we still need to incorporate it into the product. Vacation rentals, transitory accommodations, you will see those in the tables. They are items that we are just reflecting what is being done to date. Timber Harvest Code, I believe, is towards the end of its public process, but it is still at the board stage, I believe. Title 21 code updates, those are something that we mean to address soon, but definitely not in this update. And then finally, stormwater code updates, that is a separate process as well. With limiting the scope, the design requirements have always been a touchy point for this project, as we have a lot of requests to tweak or modify some of the design standards as we move forward. That is the biggest difficulty with this project, is limiting the scope. So we are adding development standards for new uses and transferring the footnotes and clarifying, but that is the extent of what we're doing. So as mentioned, we are now into the phase where we're presenting what we have developed and analyzed over the course of the last 6 months since the public process kind of faded a little bit for us to do this work. We've developed a strategy using resource guides. As we move forward through the process, you'll recognize that there's a formal proposal that requires legal language to be developed in an ordinance format. That is very difficult to present in a way that shows you how the content is changing or how the permissibility is changing for a use in a specific zone. So we've developed resource guides that give you that content-based change. And then as we move forward for the July 7th study session, you'll see that that's going to have the formal proposal in an ordinance format with our staff report and analysis behind that. Consideration phase, which is where we are right now. As I mentioned, we are releasing the department recommendation as of today with those resource guides. We're going to go through our public review process and have a revised draft after that, most likely, then go through our board process for another round of opportunity for public comment. So in that consideration process, our first meeting actually was on March 3rd for the start of that process. And we went through, you'll kind of recognize the image on the screen here. We actually went through an exercise of going through the Word document and strategies of how to navigate the document. We went through preliminary feedback from the outreach efforts and the strategy for development of our recommendation itself. Our anticipated timeline moving forward, today, the 16th and the 7th, our study sessions. We expect to have an open public comment period starting in June that will be ready for the July 21st public hearing. From that date, the main thing is that we are still maintaining our effective date. The schedule has slid a little bit because of the COVID-19 situation and some of the difficulty in the logistics of getting these meetings prepared and underway. The schedule may slide depending on how we progress through our public process. However, we still intend to have an effective date of January 1st and continuously update this as we move through so it's clear to the public and to all the commissioners. So for our work study sessions coming up, today is the proposed changes to the use table. That is the resource guide that you received today. We did not anticipate everybody to review that. That is something we are presenting today for everyone to review primarily for the next meeting. But it does include all of the zones, all of the uses, and our proposed permissibilities for those uses. That is the major difference between this meeting and those in the past. This is the first time we've had this entire table out there. So what this table is, it's showing what's allowed to be built in each zone, what that level of permit review is required prior to construction. You do have past materials that have been provided in previous meetings. I am happy to provide those again if needed. We didn't want to make the package too big for moving forward, but we have the zone purpose statements, level of permit review, each of those items that are likely going to be included in the staff report. But we have provided those to you in previous meetings for your review moving forward. The meeting on the 16th is going to take what we do today, allow you to review the table. Hopefully today prevents you from going through exercises that take too much time. We're trying to reduce the amount of time you have to actually review this. But then on the 16th, you will also have the definitions and most, if not all, of the regulations that we are proposing to move, clarify, or modify. And then again, for the 7th, that's when we're gonna have our study session on the formal recommendation and the report moving forward through the public process. That will be the document, the amendments that you make your motions to change. So for today, we've provided the resource guide to you in the table format. I'm gonna go through a quick summary of the changes you will likely see in that table. Not likely, but you will see them in the table. But these are the ones that we felt needed to stand out and get your attention. So to start, the zone intent for each zone is not changing as a result of this process. So keeping that in mind, a general sense here of the land uses and how they've been modified is going to be first, and then we'll kind of go through a zone by zone. So for residential uses, we are using density as our driver, where residential uses are allowed. We now allow more product types. So instead of only allowing single family residents, we're allowing single family, duplex, multifamily, and that's based on the density. So if you can only have one house there for through maximum density, you're gonna have a single family home and vice versa. Less permit review for the group facilities in residential zones. That's your convalescent care, assisted family living, those kind of facilities. We've allowed more permissive reviews on those in the residential zones. The commercial uses, less permit review for large scale uses in the high intensity commercial zones. The less permit review for small scale group facilities in residential zones. The group facilities is kind of a combo. You have some that are commercial in nature, some that are residential. They kind of straddle a line there. And in the urban low, urban cluster, those are allowing small scale commercial at specific intersections. Those are arterial to collector intersections. Scale that up one more. You have an urban medium. It's allowing small scale service uses that's aligned with the intent of the zone. that is allowed in the zone. It doesn't require a specific intersection. And the other major part of that is we are removing the requirement, or proposing to, that a residential component be part of the project. So it removes a required mixed use project to do a commercial project. Likewise in Urban High, the main difference there is that it's professional office uses, not the services, from commercial. And again, removing the requirement for residential at the project level. Commercial uses are also allowed in a small scale for equipment rentals and repairs in industrial zones. It's a commercial use, but it's more of an industrial application of a land use. For the industrial uses, you'll see less permit review for the typical industrial uses in an industrial zone. For those that we could, we reduced it as much as we could, but a lot of times you'll still see that it's an administrative conditional use permit to allow for public feedback. We are allowing some storage uses in residential zones to serve platted developments. That's meant to help with some of the walkability and mixed use goals and targets from GMA and our comprehensive plan. It's meant to have somebody in a residential development shouldn't have to drive all the way across town just to go to a storage unit. That's kind of what it's trying to prevent. On that same issue of storage, we do show a prohibited storage in many commercial zones. You'll see that it's more permissive in an industrial location. That is likely going to warrant some additional conversation when we get into deliberations. Our institutional uses, you'll see less permit review for schools in the commercial zones. Generally, that is a use that you'll see transition from a county to a city in terms of civic structures. Our recreational uses, we allow or require less review in residential zones. There were some that did not allow recreational facilities. We do believe that's an amenity for a residential area. We added temporary and accessory uses to the table. I know this is going to be a point of discussion when we get into it with when you start talking about firework stands and garage sales and each of those things. We know those are going to be some discussion topics. And finally, we have some new uses that we have to address the new uses in all zones. So that includes some changes to rural zones. But the guide on that is Growth Management Act and our comprehensive plan and our goal to keep rural Kitsap rural while maintaining the ability to have rural economies and keeping the character of the county in mind. So getting to some of the zone specific pieces. Mineral resource overlay. There were uses in that zone that would have prevented aggregate extraction in the future. So some of those uses you'll see being pulled back, prohibited. And it's allowing some new uses that wouldn't prevent aggregate extraction, but it allows somebody to use their property at the same time with that overlay. The urban restricted and green belt, less permit review required for the residential products in lower density neighborhoods. So typically your single family townhomes, less likely to see your multifamily, multi-story structures in those kind of environments. We don't prohibit them, but less permit review for the lower density types. Urban low and urban cluster. That is a specific one where we mentioned the small scale services and offices for commercial uses at major intersections. That is something to pay attention to for the tables. And as the common theme throughout this entire document, allowing all the residential product types in the zones that allow residential. I believe we've already touched on the urban medium, but it's allowing reduced permit requirement for small-scale commercial services. Likewise, the urban high here, it's going to be the same thing, but for that small-scale office use. In the commercial zone and regional center, these are the two zones that typically allowed larger commercial uses, larger storefronts, more of the high-intensity commercial uses. That's where you see the differentiation between these and your neighborhood commercial, low-impact commercial. Parks is going to be a very interesting one for us. The park zone, you will see that it allows or it reduces the permit requirements for many of the small-scale commercial uses and recreational uses. Part of this is to provide an opportunity for partnerships to better the park system. It allows for the permissibility of affordable housing in certain circumstances. And this is partially due to the parks needing, you know, they are something that has the opportunity to be a revenue generating source. They have an existing facility for bed and breakfast. They have existing facilities that, for the fairgrounds as a good example, that commercial uses are something that would be expected in those locations. But if we prohibit them, they become non-conforming. So the park zone is something that we are going to be looking at very carefully as well in this process. And finally, for the limited areas of more intense rural development, the acronym on the screen, LAMRD, we didn't separate out the commercial for this slide. Pretty much in general, the commercial LAMRD zones, we allowed small-scale commercial uses, the recreational, institutional, really based on scaling. So if it's small-scale, that was our guiding point there. Prohibits the large-scale commercial uses of those that we've split out. And in the residential, you'll see that it allows for many of the residential uses, and actually the recreational uses are something that were not allowed in LAMRDs. So that is a new item that you'll see as being an allowed use. Reduced permit review for many of the residential uses because that's what's expected in those zones. But it does prohibit large institutional uses such as high schools and colleges and things like that. Finally, the Rural Employment Center, that is one that prohibits many of the large-scale commercial uses, but still allows some of the smaller service and office uses that would accompany industrial developments and serve some of the workers that are in that area. So finally, we get to the end of our summary. The proposed changes to the table, our resource guide, that detailed guide, that is the use table that we provided. And that's, my apologies for my dog barking. So that is this table that you have before you. At this time, I would like to open it up for questions before we go through the table. Amanda, I don't know if there's a way to do a hand raise on this or if it is what the best logistic way is to do this.
In terms of the planning commissioners, if usually the chair, Mr. Eliason, usually kind of sorts through and calls on folks. We can do it that way, or I can just kind of take a look.
Okay. Well, I'd like to see if there are any questions right now about the presentation thus far.
We'll just turn it over to the chair for now.
Sounds great. Commissioners, any questions or comments?
Yep. Hello.
Commissioner Shattuck.
Just a quick question, Darren. Can we get a copy of your slideshow?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if we could do that, that'd be great. That'd be helpful.
That will be provided at the end of the meeting as well.
Thank you.
That also will be posted on our website too, so members of the public can will be able to access that and look at it probably tomorrow and going forward too, since it was part of the presentation tonight for the meeting.
Great, thanks.
I've got a split screen, so I can't see anybody, or I shouldn't say anybody, I can't see everybody. So if you have any questions or comments, feel free to speak.
I don't have any questions about the presentation that was done, but Darren, if you're going to be working through the use table, can we ask questions as you go, as opposed to saying, oh no, let's go all the way back to the start and ask a question about things?
As we move through the table, that is something where I am comfortable answering questions in the moment for the detailed portion of the table. As we move forward, feel free to ask the questions. Let me know if there are any issues with visibility. And the run through of the table is primarily going to go through the residential table first. You'll get an understanding of how it's showing. You saw a preview before of how it was lumping and splitting and how it was shown on the table. This is meant to give you that entire the entire document in that format. So it's not going to be going through line by line on each of these. That is something we feel like that would be the review over the next couple of weeks, if that's fair. We know that you are just seeing this for the first time today. So. With that being said, unless I don't see any other questions.
Before you proceed, I just have one procedural issue. So in previous executive summary, you gave us a report of all the testimony the department has received through work groups and various meetings. It was quite extensive, very helpful. But I wanted clarification. What I specifically want to know is some of the comments in there about specific, we'll call them line items or policies. Was that the general consensus of the group, or was that an individual that spoke to it? And I'll give you an example. So one of the work groups, one of the sections was requesting expansion in residential zones so that you could locate taverns. And the reasoning mentioned in the matrix was that that would cut down on the number of DUIs, which I thought that was, I had never seen anything like that before. And it was interesting, but is that the comment of a specific attendee at the work group, or was that the consensus of that particular work group?
In the workshops, those were in a setting where we had three different tables with different facilitators. So in terms of capturing the notes, I would have to err on the side of caution and say that it was not a consensus, but that was a comment from somebody specific. How much consensus around that comment, I would not be able to provide.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to know. Thank you.
Question, yeah. Sir?
Commissioner Beatty?
What is the gray text?
So the gray text is indicating those are zones or uses. You'll see it down in the bed and breakfast as well. Those are zones or uses where we are not making substantive changes for the zone.
So it's still allowed, though.
Correct. So you'll see in the accessory dwelling unit attached, detached. It's showing it grayed out as permitted for the attached and conditional, and that's the existing permissibility right now.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, and in the chat, Commissioner Mall would like to know if it's possible to get an editable version of the use table so that we can mark it up while we review.
So I believe we are providing this to you in a Word format. We provided a locked document Word format to prevent version control issues. I can work with Amanda to see what we can do But we have to be very careful of putting a Word document out that can be edited, because we have to be careful of something being out in the public that is not our proposal, and accidentally being taken as such. So I'm going to have to discuss that with Amanda.
Just to clarify, when I review documents, I really like to add comments so that when we, in 2 weeks when we're going through it, I remember what I noted when I was looking through it the first time. And when we get to that point on my version, I'll have a little comment out to the side that says, you know, ask this question about that. It would be helpful, even if we can't actually edit the main portion of the document, if there was some way to attach comments. And it just occurs to me that I could probably just PDF it and then use Acrobat to add comments if that ends up being the best way.
If it doesn't work in Word, that might be the best way.
I think you make a good point, and that's a really handy thing to be able to do, especially on something this large and complex. So at minimum, a PDF might be good. Not everybody might have the ability to do that, though. I don't know if all the Planning Commission members have the ability to comment on a PDF. But we can work with Amanda and come up with a solution.
Were you asking for, like, right now? Like, you would want me to send you something right now? And there's also a track changes version, too, that might work.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't need to be right now.
Okay, I was just checking. Thanks.
One thing about Adobe, if you send a PDF, Adobe Reader does allow you to add comments. You don't have to have Pro, just all you have to have is Reader, and you can add your comments in.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions or comments before we proceed?
And I would like to ask if any of my colleagues have anything else that they wanted to say in terms of the presentation, if there was anything that I missed. Not yet.
Keep going, Darren. I'm okay. I'll chime in if necessary.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Dave. The only thing that I would add to that is I know we've had a couple of transitions of Planning Commission members since we started this whole process. So I just want to point out a couple of things. Number one is that in general, we tried to consolidate some of the uses. And while we consolidated uses, there was a little bit of expansion in the uses in the scale of the uses. So Darren made multiple mentions of small scale versus large scale commercial, for example. So we have a number of uses where we've kind of expanded the range of that kind of scaling. So there's contraction of uses in some areas and expansion in other areas, but they were kind of in those two categories. The other thing is that there's a balance here in terms of what do we provide in terms of flexibility and what do we and how tightly do we stick with the stated purpose of the zone. And Darren mentioned that we're not changing the purposes of the zones. That's something that normally would occur in the comprehensive plan planning process, which is still a couple of years out. But what we can do here is if we are seeing collectively a need for a change in the purpose of a zone, we can start to queue it up here, even though we're not officially changing the purpose of the zone. It is possible to start to queue up some of those changes, and knowing that when 2024 comes around, we'll be updating the comprehensive plan. So those are just a couple of big picture reminders that we talked about. Gosh, it's almost a year ago when we first started these discussions.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Those are great points. Anybody else? I know I appreciate the color coding too, especially as you get into the matrix, the complexity of it, and every time you come across a particular section, and if there's a change without having to go back to look at prior copies or the current zoning category in effect, you don't have to look that up now because thanks to staff, we're able to at least have the color coded between red and green and brown and the other colors to make easy reference to it.
Okay. I believe we're ready to move into some of the more detailed discussions, if that's all right.
Yes, please proceed.
So I'm going to do a quick run through of these items. So when you see something that captures your attention, please flag me, let me know. But I'm just going to run through these. As you can see, the red text is indicating that we're changing something, adding something. So right now we have an accessory dwelling unit that's already defined. We have regulations that go with it. So we're referencing that on the side here. But even those that do not have a definition or categorical use, everything pretty much has a definition, but the categorical uses and the standards, some of these will have, you'll see in the later document, on the 16th, it'll have a reserve. But every single one of them is gonna have a link to that location. So that's the way this document is set up. Links to the zone chapters on top. As we move down, you'll see that guest house, this is one of those uses we are removing completely. It's not getting rolled up into anything else. It was a use that didn't really serve a purpose in our use table. These other three took care of the circumstances that this usually applied. Since those are accessory, we have a subsection of dwelling that's...
Darren, you had invited a comment during the course of going through here. Just real quick, and I know we'll get in more detail later, but the thought is let's talk about some of these things as we go. Detached ADUs, it just strikes me as that's been an incredible drain on staff resources, hearing examiner time, and cost of housing requiring a CUP. And so was there any consideration given to an administrative CUP to save an incredible amount of time and effort and promote affordable housing?
I will say yes, a lot of consideration was given to that. That is, for us, it is beyond the scope of the project. It has a large implication in our department. We discussed the possibility of changing it to an ACUP for both the attached and detached, but that's something that is beyond the scope of the project. We said that this was for the urban zones, Lammerds, and the MRO. So that is something that we've captured in our parking lot items to discuss at a later date. But that is definitely a big item of concern for affordable housing. We realize that.
Well, why if it's a big issue, we know it's a big drain of resources, why can't we just do it now? Is it, they're just saying it's just too hard to look at that issue now?
Yeah, this is Commissioner Murphy. I was going to ask a similar question. How is it outside scope to just not talk about it in certain zonings when you have changed these to ACUPs and Cs to ACUPs? And you can even see it in the light green columns here. So to say that it's outside scope or beyond scope of this project does not make sense in the context of what I'm looking at on the screen.
The distinction there is that the columns there that you see on the left are the rural zones, and the changes that we're looking at in the use table are the urban zones. The only places where you see changes to uses within the rural areas outside of the Lammerds is where we've actually changed a land use. So in this case, we're not changing that land use. So there's no change that that shows there for that rural area. That's why it's grayed out. The challenge, part of the challenge.
This is that, Commissioner Allen.
Beg your pardon?
I'm sorry. No, go ahead, Dave.
Part of the challenge that we run into here is if we open everything to discussion, this is going to take a project that was originally intended to be a year-long project and is now on a two-year timeline and could very easily turn it into a five-year timeline. And so that's why we're focusing on those urban areas. And that's why we're trying to also focus our attention on reducing barriers to development in those urban areas. There are also Growth Management Act implications to doing that as well. And so that it kind of opens up a bit of a Pandora's box of issues if we start revisiting everything in the rural areas as well as urban.
So is there something at the state GMA level that says don't address the rural sections of the use table? And if it does, then are we saying we're mandated to ignore them? And if we are, when do they come up?
So the Growth Management Act issue here is that we have the potential, if we start allowing ADUs in rural areas unconditionally, that it starts to change the ratio of how we are developing in the rural areas versus urban areas. And that is something that is definitely a GMA issue.
Mr. Commissioner Allen, I would like to, I understand what you're saying, Dave, but I'm also concerned. I mean, we could make this an ACUP, reduce some of the cost and process involved with this for detached ADUs, and still not throw open the Pandora's box that you're speaking about. I mean, the affordable housing being such a compelling goal right now, I really, would like to see if we could take this up just as a limited exception to not dealing with the rural yet. You know, I understand where you're coming from, but boy, this is really important, at this time. And then the other thing is that I also have the same question, that the other commissioners asked. If not now, then when? What's the process to capture this and deal with the rural area uses?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And if the Planning Commission wants to make that recommendation, the Planning Commission certainly can make that recommendation. The caution that I would urge you is that we, throughout the duration of this project, we have been challenged with the notion that, well, if we're opening up the use table, we might as well change everything now. And what we're trying to focus on is some reorganization, some streamlining. But if we start getting into things like the development standards and rethinking every footnote that's in the use table and everything else, it just mushrooms the scope of the project substantially. But the Planning Commission is certainly entitled to make those recommendations. I'm not saying that that's not a possibility.
What you relayed is that one of the ways we're keeping housing out of the rural areas is to make it expensive and a horrible process so people won't want to apply. So that's the way we're keeping in our GMA standards, is having a lot of process, a lot of money, a lot of cost, so people won't do it, so we'll meet our GMA goals. I just don't think that's a good way to look at things. And again, if we've got a issue, we say, this is a big deal, and it's fairly easy to fix. I don't think, again, as Commissioner Allen said, we're opening up the whole Pandora's box. We say, look, this is one we can fix now. We're here. We're not opening everything. Let's just fix the things that we can fix now and get it done.
So I think this is something that we will be discussing in deliberations. I think we're getting into a deliberation moment right now. As we move forward, those are definitely items that I'm flagging for when we get into the deliberations. And in the next couple of meetings, I'll be keeping track of all those and pulling those up in the meetings after a hearing. So. But definitely valid questions. So,
and I Darren, if I might, Commissioner Murphy here. I think that, you know, those of us that use these tables every day, I think that you could see that at least in the first 30 seconds, you've got a third of this commission that is actively recommending that that be addressed and not have that can kicked down the road when the other side of our mouth as a political entity is saying that we support affordable housing. So I don't think we're going to let it go. So yes, please note it.
Duly noted.
I think I'll note that the staff and commissioners all had valid points, and just a couple things about our history, not that we can't change it at future meetings, especially if a majority commission wants to go that direction. But as Dave noted, two things. One is we started this process a year ago, and the staff briefed us about putting these sidebars on it, correct? And there wasn't a formal vote taken by the commission, but we let the project proceed. So we just got to keep in mind, as Dave mentioned, if we start to go into these areas, which is fine, you know, there's going to be, there could be unintended consequences of it. And then as Dave mentioned too, and I'll note in the past when there've been any proposals about changing, especially detached ADUs, there's been a lot of opposition from the tribes, environmental groups, and members of the public. So it's a very contentious issue, but at the same time, you guys make a great point because even cities like Bainbridge Island have found ways to make amendments to their policies to increase ADUs even temporarily because of their housing shortages. So I get the impression that staff heard you, and we'll have to see how we proceed. Feel free, Darren.
And to your point, Commissioner Eliason, the examples that are typically mentioned are in cities, and our urban growth areas are very similar to cities in nature. That's what they're supposed to be. And that's where they are permitted outright. So there is a different nature in what we're talking about for rural Kitsap County versus urban growth areas. But we do recognize the discussion points. So we know that we're going to be having that conversation coming down the line. So looking forward to it.
Great.
Thank you.
So with that being said, as you'll see, most of the uses, it's pretty clear as to what we're showing here. The manufactured home RV park, it's not showing up as a new permissibility. That's because it was pulled from a recreational vehicle park permissibility standard. So we use that as our baseline and show that this is changing in the urban high zones to an allowed use. So if you see some of those very distinct subtleties, just realize that a lot of those are deliberate. And to the point of rolling up, so single family attached is moving up into multiple family, but it's still recognized as single family in the definition and in the design regulations and things like that. So there are categorical uses that were requested by the workshop to maintain the name of the use, at least in the definition, if not more, as a separate use, because it had implications for project feasibility and finances through the banks. Certain things like that actually came into play on these in the workshops for this. You'll see that we pulled up mobile home into single family detached. The difference between mobile home and a manufactured home is the year that it was, the year it was constructed. I believe it was 1974 and before, as allowed to be an existing mobile home. It's a very unique definition. So, and you'll see that the permissibility of single family detached is permitted across the board, but with a mobile home, it was a conditional use permit. But like I said, we're allowing the density to drive what's allowed here. We do understand there's an aesthetic point to this. So that is likely a point of discussion as well. getting into our group living. So the other items were family living, that's your traditional housing style. You get into the group living, that's rolling up boarding houses, convalescent homes, and assisted living facilities into this group living definition. So you'll see that each three of these, it's showing the permissibility against this. For this specific row of group living, the assisted living independent facility or previously a residential care facility, that was our baseline that we used. So this baseline was actually pulled up into the group living for both 1 to 6 rooms and 7 or more. And then it shows compared to that, your convalescent home was prohibited, but now it would be an ACUP and urban restricted. So those are things to look for as you're reviewing this. You'll see the green, generally the green's just getting you a visual cue that, hey, it's becoming more permissive in this area. This is an interesting one. So permanent transitory accommodations. This is a unique one. We're not changing anything. We're just adding it to the table from another chapter in code. This is the permanent accommodation, whereas at the end of the table you see it in temporary as well. You have to get the temporary permits in order to get to the permanent. As I mentioned, there's no changes to the permissibilities, it's just adding it to the table. The bed and breakfast house vacation rentals, those are actually pulled apart from footnote 34. That's why you see them grayed out. We're not changing permissibilities on those either. Home business, this is pulled out of the footnote in the special provisions in 17410.060. So this is pulling apart that footnote and showing the permissibility as was described in that footnote. And then after we put those into the table with their existing permissibility, we're showing that instead of having to get an ACP, it would be a permitted and urban restricted. Am I going too fast for anyone? Okay. I'm trying to get through this so that you have a remainder of an evening. So, event facility is a new use. And that's where you're gonna see all the way across, we're showing it as a new use, new permissibilities. That's one we had to address in the rural zones. Same thing with the resort. We are likely to get public comments regarding these two uses in rural zones. And we have design standards associated with event facilities and resorts that we are providing. The restaurants changed from just high turnover into with a drive-through service and without. So those elements you'll see throughout the document. But each of those are existing, slight changes to existing terminology. Finally, in the retail, you'll see that a lot of these things are actually getting wrapped up. Not a lot of permissibility changes in here. Where you do see the changes, this is where we're talking about small scale commercial use and urban low, urban cluster. This would be at your major intersections.
These I have a do question not... about this yes. section. Could you talk a little bit about what a charging station entails? I'm imagining, like, for example, in downtown Edmonds, there are a few parking places that have little, like, pedestal charging things that you can plug your electric car into. Is that a charging station, or is a charging station like an entire business where that's its only purpose in life?
This is an example of that nuance is a good subtlety to identify, but this is where you have more like the Tesla stations where it is a station purely set up to charge cars.
Okay. So if you wanted to put
as opposed to an accessory in a parking lot.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
There are some of these that look very much like a drive-through gas station, except they're for electric vehicles instead.
Right.
So people are just hanging out there longer.
That makes sense. I just didn't want to prevent, say, like a mixed-use development from installing charging stations for residents to or visitors to plug their cars into, that sort of thing. So.
Right. This particular one is kind of looking forward to the future of transportation and trying to look forward in our code rather than stick with, you know, old-fashioned technologies. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, we don't even know if some of these things in the long run are going to what they're going to develop into, and whether or not you'll ever see electric charging stations with convenience stores or anything like that. But there are definitely some of these starting to crop up.
Well, right now you're saying that there's no permitted use in any area.
In the residential zones as a standalone use. So if it was the only use on the property.
Right, but if you look at 214, it's not allowed anywhere.
Correct. 214 is being rolled up into this. And so we've carried that
it's
permission.
It's still not allowed anywhere.
Correct. So that's primarily in the commercial and industrial zones that you'll see. I believe, yeah. So both of them, one with a convenience store, one without. That is one that we have gone back and forth on as to, you know, should that be allowed at corners in a platted development, at major intersections, that kind of thing. So. That may be a discussion point as well.
So, Darren, you're saying that these things do occur in commercial areas and in other zones, just not in the residentials, correct?
Correct.
And again, that you can have a charging station as an incidental use. So if you have a group facility, the table would prohibit having a charging station in the parking lot of a group facility in the rural residential zone. It's just a standalone use.
Correct. And I can actually speak to that from a project perspective. Any project that we do that is a multifamily, I can speak to one that happens to be inside the city of Port Orchard, but we are required to make 10% of our stalls available to electric plug-in. So, Commissioner Beam, Darren's point or Mr. Wart's point is simply that only thus far, and now he's showing you other zones that are non-residential. So I think your initial instinct that, wait a minute, we don't allow them in the county, period. We were only looking at the residential and mixed with residential type zone in this first section of the code.
I'm trying to find it here in the commercial piece here. Okay, sorry about that. So yes. So as Commissioner Beam identified, it's not permitted in the residential zones. We used automobile service station as our base for the permissibility. And you can see that we're showing that it actually changes to permitted in neighborhood commercial and rural commercial. So there are some instances where the permissibility is being increased. Is this okay with the split screen for everybody? Okay, I'm getting nods, yes. Okay, so as you can see, the larger retail stores, larger commercial operations, not really showing permissibility in the rural or in any of the residential zones. Let's see here. This is an area where you're seeing more of the commercial based kind of daycare centers, more permissibility. This is in line with what the workshops feedback provided to us, as well as public feedback beyond the workshops. This is where you see that the office and management services are shown as being allowed in the urban medium, urban high. and something you'll see throughout the table, we're rolling in engineering and construction offices and the financial banking institutions. Those are just rolling into that general office and management services. So the size and scale of those two items, you'll see it actually in multiple locations getting rolled up, and it shows their permissibility changing to each of these categorical uses.
So Darren, correct me if I misstate here, but that's a good example where, if you scroll back up to where you were before, that's a good example where we're showing the general office and management services in different scales and allowing greater permissibility in residential areas. But by doing so, we're also managing the scale of that too. So we don't end up with a huge office complex in the middle of a single family residential neighborhood, but we are allowing smaller scale diversity and mixed use. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And you'll see that it coincides with this as well, where these were prohibited completely. As this peels back towards the higher intensity zones, the larger the facility, you actually get some more permissibility than the lower density zones. So clinic is a service, that's part of the zone intent for urban medium, is to provide services. Same with the personal services here. Rolling in, I know we had a discussion about dry cleaners versus laundromats and laundry services. So that's something I know that we're going to be looking at as well when we get into the use standards. So in that chapter 17.415, that'll be where we discuss the dry cleaner versus the laundromat. Finally, we get down towards kind of the unique pieces here. So adaptive reuse, shared work makerspace. This is showing fairly consistent with other jurisdictions of where they require the conditional use permit. You have an existing commercial building that you want to change to a different use. If it's still commercial, allows you to reuse that space. These generally would have more impact on a residential neighborhood. That's why you see the conditional use permits there. Okay. This is where we're identifying we've allowed more recreational facilities. Taking away amusement center, that is going into the recreational facilities for indoor, outdoor. You'll see that we still have a pretty large permit requirement through a conditional use to address any kind of compatibility issues. Two new uses that you will see here, shooting gun facilities. These are something that we are taking direction very clearly from our legal department, making sure that we are good to go on that. We could have more discussions about that, but those are likely something that's going to be pretty hard to change as we move forward in the process.
What are they now?
Right now, we're showing prohibited across the rural and urban residential zones. I believe it's in the industrial zones that those will come into play. And that's where
the split screen. All our rural gun ranges are no longer going to be permitted.
So that is rural commercial. And to answer your question, Mr. Beam, it would become a non-conforming use. They'd be allowed to continue operations if they're legally established.
Darren, can you scroll back up and show it in the commercial industrial again?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And this is rural commercial. These are the business park, business center zones, regular industrial, and rural industrial.
And can you go back up to outdoor recreation in the residential table? Is that where something like a wedding facility who's having weddings every weekend would be?
That would be the event facility. So going back up to commercial, and avert your eyes if you don't like scrolling. That's okay. So here's your event facility.
It's pretty prohibitive across the board, just thinking about barns on people's properties who might want to start a business around the fact that that's a place. And I know a lot of this has to do with traffic.
Mr. Murphy, none of that comment came through. If you could just repeat that, the audio didn't pick up any of it. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I was just saying that that feels quite prohibitive in rural parts of our county where I could envision someone with 5 acres that might want to start a business because they have a beautiful barn and could hold small weddings. I'm just trying to envision, you know, not cutting off a business opportunity at the knees. And I know we've talked about this before, that, you know, the traffic impact analysis of an event like that, which would be not very aligned with with rural. So I recall both sides of the argument. I'm just thinking about folks that have, you know, small Airbnbs or but have the acreage that they could host that. Are we really ruining that opportunity for anybody in our county in a rural area to have a wedding venue on acreage? That's all.
But then you're jumping in and saying everybody around them, well, that's the way it goes. You came out to the rural area, but here comes a business right next to you.
No, I know. I understand both sides. I know how many people look for that beautiful setting, and it appears that it would be pretty much, when you consider cost prohibitive, we're pretty much saying that, nope, there's no property in rural areas that, maybe I'm wrong when we get into rural commercial, and I just can't pick it. I'm just saying it out loud.
With this use in mind, you should be aware that, as I mentioned in the design standards chapter, the 415, we have developed design standards that we plan to provide to you in the next week that goes over in detail the certain conditions of what we're expecting the permit to address. The permissibility that is shown here is fairly consistent with what we do right now. From what I'm aware of is the rural wooded zone. The intent is for it to be a resource, you know, kind of a pseudo resource zone where it's allowed for logging, but then the forest resource zone, we don't have much of that in Kitsap County. That is purely for forestry resource. That's why you don't see it in a permissible, allowing permitted uses there for event facilities.
Darren, you don't have to show me the ones that are supposed to be resources and land related. I'm just saying when you know.
Yeah.
As
so they do have the opportunity.
Go ahead.
Sorry. They do have the opportunity if they have a farm. You mentioned a barn. If they have a farm, they have the agriculture code that they can use agritourism to get a reduced permit for 8 events per year.
Okay, that's right. Thanks for the reminder.
But I do hear what you're saying. So that will be a point of discussion, I imagine, moving forward as well.
I'm thinking of the area around Seebeck. They have restaurants, they have hotels, they have conference centers, they have marinas. None of those appears to be allowed in the rural.
If it's not shown in the table, then that would be correct.
Well, I'm just saying.
It's also important to remember, Commissioner Beam, that a lot of that Seebeck area is zoned rural commercial. So the restaurant you see on that drive out there, that's a rural commercial zone.
Okay.
Not a residential zone.
Right.
Okay.
A quick question about the shooting and gun facility, indoor and outdoor. Are these changes conforming to the current policy of the Board of County Commissioners? And I guess my question is, the second part of that is, are all the current facilities non-conforming uses right now, or would we be approving something that would make any changes?
I will have to look into that.
Okay, thank you.
I did not get into the detailed analysis of how many non-conforming facilities we had in for shooting ranges or shooting facilities.
I believe we have 2 shooting ranges in unincorporated Kitsap County. One is the Kitsap Revolver Rifle Club, which has its own course of litigation and court case law associated with that. And the other one is the Paulsbo Sportsman Complex. The Bremerton Skeet, I believe, is within City of Bremerton, but we can verify that.
Great, thank you.
Everybody okay if I continue with the uses here? So I easiest way to do this is to actually go through the residential table, because it doesn't have many changes to it in these later uses, but it shows the lumping and splitting at least. So you'll see as we get down into the daycare center, we've discussed that with the engineering offices. Got to that. Something you'll see in our urban cluster zone is it's going to a conditional use for some of the recreational pieces. That is to be consistent with the urban low. We have had requests that the urban cluster be more permissive for more activities and more uses. So that may be something that comes up during public process.
Darren, can you please explain for the commission the logic behind the marina and the marina support services and the distinction there? Sure. And there's a similar distinction for airports as well.
Yes. So marinas are you're going to find your marinas on the water. So that proposed use is in the table currently. The marina support services, it could be that you have some facilities upland that are not connected directly to the marina, but are close by, that could support the marina in certain ways, boat supply shops, things like that, fueling stations, I believe typically are on the water, but I've read that there are some that you do it on land. If I believe that's the extent of it, it's merely like if it's not on the marina, it still provides an opportunity for somebody to support the marina that's close by.
Could also be storage, could be graving docks, could be other facilities like that for maintenance that aren't necessarily directly tied to the water. They don't have to be wet, but they can be upland because you can move a boat or store a boat not on the water, but upland.
Right. Okay. So museums, galleries, all those things got rolled into entertainment facilities for indoor and outdoor, trying to simplify. This is going to be an interesting one with racetracks. Not too many racetracks get proposed in Kitsap County. We figured that it was, whether it's a minor or a major, it's going to be something that is contentious no matter what it is. So that's something where we've maintained the conditional use permit requirement. It does allow, this actually should be showing as green. And it does allow a major racetrack to occur in these rural locations. But you'll see many of the recreational amenities are becoming allowed in our residential areas. Schools is another one for institutions. We're reducing the permit requirements for pretty much all schools in residential areas. That breaks down schools into the different types that are going to have different impacts to our residential areas. So different traffic patterns, all those kind of things are taken into account as to create these different categories.
Darren, just before we get out of it, you know, one of the issues that has come up in the past is water-dependent uses like aquaculture. For example, the oyster plant in Seaback, and that's clearly in a rural zone. And you don't need to go back and show me, but do we have a use in the rural zone that would allow water-dependent uses like aquaculture?
I believe it does, and it's actually at the end of the table.
Okay.
So if it doesn't come up at the end of the table, I will make sure and highlight that.
Darren, sorry to jump back, but did you use the adjective major when you referred to racetrack?
Yes. We have major and we have minor.
Okay.
So this is the...
Were those original definitions made at the time of the NASCAR proposal or are those subsequent?
That is my understanding.
Okay.
That is correct, Chair Eliason, that was a follow-up from NASCAR as one of the staff that worked on that proposal back in the day.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see. One of the unique pieces in here under institutional, I will say, is transportation terminals. So ferry terminals, things like that, we recognize that there are those terminals in rural locations. Southworth Ferry is a good example of that. So we have multiple locations where you can have points of access, and we didn't want to be prohibitive in that. But this is going to be something we have to be very careful and make sure that it's it has design standards rolled into this proposal. See here. Airports is another one, like Dave was mentioning, where it's airports that includes the support services that go along with it. So the runways, the hangars, all of these things, including the air pilot training schools, that's all going into this use. And I believe it was with the Planning Commission that we actually lucked out in having a pilot with us in the audience that came up and gave us some information about air training, air pilot training being almost more intrusive than a regular airport. So I found that to be rather fortuitous. You'll see that we split out food and beverage into a scaled use there. And as we go through the table, storage is going to be kind of the last big hurrah here, where storage is a large issue in our discussions, both with the public and internally. We almost always have discussions about this every couple of months. So as I mentioned, the storage is meant to be allowed for residential areas to serve the immediate residents of a plat. In some of the locations in urban high, urban medium, that may be, it could be something that the Planning Commission comes back with. It should be allowed regardless of a plat to serve higher densities of population where they live and reside.
I'm aware of the city's restrictions. Do we happen to know from the private sector what their capacity is right now and percentage of units filled?
I do not have that, but we might be able to figure that out.
Okay. I missed the first part of your question, Mike. Could you repeat that quick?
So I can't remember the timeline, but the city of Paulsboro decided, I believe it was on Viking Avenue, they wanted to put further restrictions on the siting of storage facilities. I guess they decided they had too many. But I'm curious, in Kitsap County, what's the capacity? Not that we have an inventory of the number of units, but even if I could even make a phone call to some of the property owners to find out what percentage of their units are currently filled and what percentage are vacant, just to get a general idea of what's happening in the marketplace.
I can speculate that the fact that people are wanting to build these things is an indication that there's a sense of a market for them. Speaking from my own personal experience, I've gone through a couple of units in the past 10 years, and I've never had a problem getting in anywhere either. So I'm not sure exactly where that sweet spot is, but you bring up a good point. One of the reasons why we are particularly interested in them is because they do seem to be somewhat controversial. They eat up a lot of land. They're, especially if they're the single story units, they're land intensive. And in some zones, that also means that it's eating up land area that could be devoted towards residential. And so that's a bit of a concern. So some of these areas we may want to consider, the merits of building storage units, but building up instead of building horizontally, build vertically. To at least absorb some of that demand. The fact of the matter is we have a lot of stuff and people want to build storage units. And so we need to kind of think about how we're going to, let that happen in our communities.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. As mentioned in the show before, in the slideshow and the summary, we generally are pulling back on storage facilities in commercial areas, allowing storage facilities or reducing the permit review in industrial locations, including rural industrial. Generally not allowing outdoor storage in residential, it's only the indoor. The zones that do allow it in industrial zones, it's allowing both indoor and outdoor. So that's where you're seeing the differences. So as we move through, I believe, Mr. Shattuck, your question about aquaculture is addressed here. In terms of specific operations in specific zones, I'm not sure what zones.
My concern is 610. Again, I think the oyster plant at Seaback and those kinds of facilities, they're water dependent. They have to be on the water, and you usually don't have them in commercial or industrial zones. So 610, we're saying you can't have an oyster plant.
For processing. The hatcheries and the processing facilities.
Okay, I understand. All right, thank you.
Right, and I will say that the requirements for a shellfish like an oyster farm out in the water, that's going to be regulated through our Title 22, I believe, our Shoreline Master Program. So we pull over agricultural uses. That comes from the table that we had in 17455. No changes to this. We may receive a request through the public process to not allow roosters in certain locations. that is always a fun one. That's likely going to be in the Lammerd zone, so that you hear that, or the urban residential zone. Getting into our temporary uses, you have all of these are identified as new uses. Permissibilities are, you know, what we, when we went through and did the intent of the zone, this is how we came up with these permissibilities. So this will likely have some discussion around them. Garage sale, these are, the garage sale is meant to be not a huge permit, but more of the ability to say, if you're having a sale every single day of the week, this is a way for us to say, you need to account for what you're doing. That's the primary intent behind that one. Firework sales, same thing. Those are, that is something that is regulated actually through the, you'll see the footnote up here refers down to.
Footnotes.
This, I know, footnotes. Refers to Title 10, where it actually identifies where firework stands are allowed. And it's pretty much anywhere you like.
Can we go back up to the garage sales for a second?
Sure.
So part of the issue there is that we do have instances in the county, and this has also come up in Port Orchard, where people have set up what are essentially permanent garage sales. And so it's not that we're, you know, trying to be heavy-handed about how we manage garage sales, rather it's just acknowledging that a garage sale is a temporary use and that it's not a permanent use.
So no permit would be required then, Dave? Is that right? For the average person hosting a, you know, garage sale during the summer?
I believe that's the intent, correct, Aaron?
That's the intent. We're trying to craft the language to make sure that's that it's kind of an exempt, conditionally exempt from a permit, but it's still a permitted use. It's almost like in the sign code, you have these conditionally exempt signs. You're allowed to put out special event signs without getting a giant permit for them. That kind of thing is what we're looking at in terms of the language for this.
And also to clarify, we do get a number of co-compliance cases of individuals, again, not, you know, our parents want to have a garage sale over the weekend to get rid of stuff or for moving or whatever. It's really an example of co-compliance that we have garage sales 24/7, 365 days a year of certain residences in our community. So just, there is a clear distinction there.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. My only concern was just the person having a garage sale, you know, once every 5 years, you know, to get ready to move, whether there would be any kind of permit required for that.
And we're also not suggesting that we go the route of I forget which town it is. I think it might be Mill Creek that has that allows them only one weekend out of the year, and then all of a sudden every neighborhood has 100 garage sales and it becomes a bit of a zoo, but the rest of the time it's they're not allowed. So we're not suggesting going that route either.
No.
Darren, is that one that's going to come back to us with the definition?
Yes.
Amendments? Okay.
Yes. And just to be clear, we have most of the definitions, most of the standards, they have pretty much been developed already. They require a couple of tweaks before we can put them into a format that allows it for public review. We want to be very careful in how we release the information and make sure it's accurate and not changing.
Darren, this is Commissioner Phillips. Mobile vendor, how big of a definition is mobile vendor?
That's without the definition in front of me, that's going to be like your food trucks, the hot dog cart. There are some instances. What's that?
Your ice cream man.
Ice cream man that sits up on the corner, that kind of thing.
Well, it mobile as in driving a truck around.
I see. I don't believe that's the intent. Mm-hmm. It's for a permanent, or it's at a fixed installation point, not using a drive to provide the service type thing.
For example, a food truck, Darren, that holds up. So at the county courthouse, we had a couple food trucks park out at one point on our county property, but also within the Port Orchard right of way. Example there, that was originally a permitted use in the zone of the courthouse, et cetera, but then subsequently through City of Port Orchard's own actions, they've prohibited that in the zone itself, but just recognizing that does occur and those questions do happen in providing a permissible route moving forward.
Is that why we lost our mobile vendor truck?
I think that as well as not enough revenue generation, but I did appreciate the food truck. A good portion of my salary went to it. So
that particular truck disappeared because they found a better location that allowed them to stay there for more days out of the week. Yep.
Okay. So I flagged that one just as a discussion point if necessary in the future. Finally, I believe this is the last of the uses, yes. So temporary offices, model homes, that was just pulled from the existing tables into this. And transitory accommodations, I mentioned it at the beginning that there's a permit for a permanent transitory accommodation, but you have to go through this temporary permit process. It's a type 2 process. So it has more review, but it's still a permitted outright use. Permissibilities have not changed from chapter 17, 505, but these nuances, this is where it took a little bit of time for us to actually get all this information together appropriately so it wouldn't change on you in the middle of the project.
So Darren, does the transitory take into account all the halfway homes and the transition homes from the Department of Corrections?
Angie may be better suited to discuss that one specifically, but I believe, let me, there's a transition facility, and again, avert your eyes if you need to. Secured transition facilities is secured transition facility is an item that we have in our tables.
Okay.
Separate from the transitory accommodations.
In addition to Darren, can you clarify in the use table, especially the residential zones, how we grouped a variety of different dwelling types to accommodate a variety of different transitional housing allowed under state statute?
Okay. So this isn't one of those, though.
Okay. The correctional, but also there is transitional facilities oftentimes run by nonprofits who renovate existing single family structures in our neighborhoods, oftentimes in urban low zones.
Okay. So
Commissioner, you've tapped into one of the more challenging questions that we've been wrestling with when it comes to all the different facilities that have different levels of treatment, different levels of care. They operate at different scales. And just trying to untangle that has been a real challenge. We've worked with our human services department to try to help us untangle that and figure out how they all operate. And there's an amazing network of federal and state regulation that goes along with all of these facilities, and they all have these very kind of nuanced differences. So we still have quite a few of them that show up in our table as it's recommended here.
Oh, you're going to explain that with footnotes?
I don't think the footnotes are going to do it for us. But things like the distinctions we see between adult family homes of one size versus another size, the secured community transition facilities, the high risk facilities, all of them serve slightly different purposes, and it's just been a real challenge for the department to try to work our way through those. But it's a really important thing that we try to crack that one open and get it solved somehow, because we've been finding ourselves within the department, we're always looking at like use determinations and trying to identify, okay, where does this new proposal fit in? And quite often it doesn't fit. So the default for a lot of them historically has been has been classing them as adult family homes. And that's kind of a local determination, but at the state level, an adult family home is a very, very specific type of facility. And so one of the things that we're recommending here, and Darren, maybe you can scroll up to that, adult family homes, we are intentionally trying to better align them to state code. So that way, when we say adult family home and the state says adult family home, we're all talking about the same thing. And then when the clients or the customers come in and are talking adult family home, we're all talking about the same thing, as opposed to a nuanced variation from jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
But, okay, that brings up the question of, does the state have other definitions of these facilities, secured, unsecured, you know? Are there a list of definitions out there?
The state does have their own definitions for them. And so we went through state code, we went through the RCW, and maybe Darren, this is something we can make a note of to kind of walk through in a future work session. Because I think it would be useful for the Planning Commission members to kind of have the opportunity to chew on this a little bit. The state does have definitions, and when we walked through this, we were trying to figure out what the differences between all these different things were, because at face value, many of them appear to be the same, yet they have different names. And the deeper we dug, the more we realized that the state has a different name for a different type of facility sometimes, just because of whether they're getting federally funded or not. Or whether it's managed by DSHS or Department of Health, for example. So there's a lot of nuance to this, and we're trying to do, we did our best to try to distill it down into something that's kind of intelligible and that aligns with the state regulations to the best we can.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that quick that we did reference state code and definitions where we could as we were developing and crafting definitions for our code here locally, just so that we can reference and have that continuity between the two, you know, pieces.
So if I recall correctly, Dave, there was about when we consolidated all the various nuances of names as well as a uniqueness in the RCW, we were at 150 different type of residential uses as well as services at that point. And I think we were just scratching the surface. So part of that consolidation that you see on the screen before you in the residential zones, group living, again, classifying number of bedrooms, 1 to 6 versus 7 or more, and separating adult family housing, we were trying to consolidate where it made sense the most. So we didn't have an additional 150 plus residential types that we would have to implement as well as minister at a code level. So we were trying to take a complicated thing, as Dave mentioned, and simplify it the best way we could in more of a group category consideration as well as the associated definition.
So one example of that is if you look at towards the bottom of the screen, adult family home serving 7 or more residents, that doesn't exist in state law. So for us to be permitting something locally that doesn't even exist in state law seemed like a bit of a disconnect. So we rearranged some of that. The fact that an adult family home according to state law, has to be a licensed adult family home. But yet locally, historically, because of like use determinations and not having any other bucket to put some of these facilities in, we've lumped a lot of things into adult family homes, whether they're licensed or not. But yet at the state, if it's an adult family home, it has to be licensed as such. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that kind of nuance that goes into it. And the deeper we got into it, the more complex it got, because I'm not going to be able to recite all this from memory because this was months ago that we were doing the deep dive on this. But we had a couple of facilities that the state had two different names for what to us looked like identical facilities. And what we learned was that the difference, according to the state, was where does the funding come from, not what's the land use or how is it impacting the community or what population does it serve. The distinction was solely based on funding, and which from a land use perspective for us doesn't make sense for us to split that hair.
Where do you have Charlotte Garrido's tiny homes in the homeless shelters?
Tiny homes?
That would be, in that particular example, that would be transitory accommodations, Commissioner Beam.
So that would be done in here?
Correct.
All transitory accommodation?
So that's an ACUP everywhere?
In the residentials. Commercial.
So can we clarify, Darren, about the temporary permit element of this, the little nuance there?
Yes. So that was for the permanent. The temporary for that small, tiny home, if you were having a temporary permit, which you have to do first, that's permitted outright. But if you want to make that a permanent location, that's when you have to get to the administrative conditional use permit.
The temporary permit is for 180 days, which is the first step to, as part of the chapter on transitory accommodations, is the first step before you can move forward to applying for a permanent land use approval.
Okay. So we are at the end of our residential portion. I'm going to say that this is, unless there's questions about how we've gone through this for the residential, this is how we envisioned you would be going through it in the next 2 weeks for the remaining, for the commercial and for the limited areas and more intense rural development. So as you're going through that, definitely, if there's some way that we're going to be able to help to get you to capture your comments, if it's through the PDF or the Word version, capturing your comments and getting them prepared for the 16th, that is why we did it this way, is we wanted to walk through this with you to address any upfront questions so that you didn't have to create an overwhelming list of questions to answer on the 16th or for today. Unless there is a major desire to go through the commercial zones and the Lamrds, I would guess that it is probably going to be the appropriate thing to go ahead and conclude the meeting at this point. But I will leave that to the chairperson, Mr. Eliason, and the Planning Commission, and take your direction from there. I'm willing to go as far as you guys need me to.
Commissioners, any comments?
When will we see the definitions?
Those should be provided to you by Tuesday of next week, a week in advance of the 16th.
Okay, any other comments? Yeah, I'm in favor of deferring the other two items, although I haven't looked at my television show schedule to see, but. My wife's going to prohibit me from watching the news, though. I've been getting a little too much of it lately and getting too crabby and talking back to the television. So I think I'll devote my time to going through the use tables. That'll calm me down a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Use music.
Yeah. And exercise.
Yeah.
Great. Any other comments, commissioners? Okay, hearing none, thank you, Darren, Liz, Angie, Dave, did I forget anybody? You guys do a great job, and we appreciate all of your efforts.
Thank you for giving us this time.
Great, and we'll move on to our next agenda item for the good of the order. And the first thing, great to see all of you, but especially Commissioner Allen, welcome back, we missed you. Glad you had safe travels. And
well, thank you. I missed you too.
Great. Two quick announcements I wanted to make. One is I sent a thank you note on behalf of the commission to the staff of Kitsap County Public Works, acknowledging their efforts and letting them know that we appreciated their service and enjoyed working with them through the road standards update. And I got really nice replies from them and the director of Public Works. And then the second thing is I wanted to thank our director, the department who joined us tonight, logged in and been listening in. We had a request from a few commissioners over the past six or so months wanting to develop a relationship with the director, and it's kind of hard to do virtually, and especially with this complex meeting schedule with the size of the department. We're fortunate to have all the staff we have at our meetings, including the assistant director, Angie, at our meetings, and so we appreciate Jeff being here and any opportunity he gets to join us. We're very thankful. Any other announcements in good of the order? Okay, hearing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
So move.
Okay, we have a motion second to adjourn. All those in favor say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Any abstentions?
Aye.
Commissioner Allen's, okay, abstains? Okay. So meeting adjourned. My time is showing 7:26 p.m. and we'll see all of you at the next regular meeting.
All right.
All righty. Thank you, Mike.
Great.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Bye.